Come plan your dream wedding all in one day at the 17th Annual Newport Bridal Show on March 3rd. Meet with more than 80 top wedding professionals at two of Newport's most romantic venues, Rose Cliff and Ocean Cliff Mansions. Visit NewportBridalShow.net to buy your ticket today.
Greetings, listeners. This is Providence Journal reporter Kevin Andrade here, reporting on the crisis that is in Gulf Venezuela. Venezuela, an oil-rich South American country, has had left-wing leaders since 1998, first under the charismatic army officer Hugo Chavez, who died from cancer in 2012 or 2013, depending on who you ask, then under Nicolas Maduro, his protege and former president of the Caracas Metro Drivers Union. That the country's currency, the Bolivar, suffers from hyperinflation at 1,700%, making basic products such as food and medicine not only expensive, with loaves of bread coming in at millions, but also extremely scarce. This, combined with an environment of political repression, has contributed to an exodus of what could be as many as 4 million people from the country, according to the Migration Policy Institute. That could only have been exacerbated within the past month as the National Assembly, which many see as a opposition front to the president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro, has backed opposition figure Juan Guaido for the presidency. While Colombia has seen the brunt of these refugees, many have come to the U.S. as well. U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services data shows that Venezuelans made up the largest number of asylum applications each month through August in 2018, the most recent numbers available, often going well over 2,000 applications. Oscar Mejias, the director of the Rhode Island Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, was born in Maracaibo, Venezuela's second largest city and oil-producing center. He came to the U.S. seeking asylum in 2003. Mejias was among the thousands of workers at Petróleos de Venezuela S.A., the state-run oil company, who went on strike against the Chavez government, claiming that it was becoming too forceful in prosecutions of management staff back in 2002. As a result of his actions, he was fired and said he was forced to flee the country to save himself from persecution. I sat down with him on Friday, February 1st, to speak about the situation. The following is our conversation.
My full name is Oscar Mejias.
How are you involved in Providence?
I came to United States in 2003, arrived in Florida, Orlando, used to live over there 3 years, but one day I found that I was with no jobs, and it was a very difficult situation, so I met someone who used to work here. I called him, I say, okay, come here, that I will find for a job for you. So I came in 2006, and well, in that year, all the story began.
And what country did you come from?
Venezuela.
Venezuela.
Yes.
What city in Venezuela are you from?
In Maracaibo. I was born in Barquisimeto, but I worked last 18 years before coming in Maracaibo.
Maracaibo is the second largest city?
Yes.
And for those who don't know, Maracaibo is also Lake Maracaibo, which where the Venezuelan petroleum industry is centered.
That's right. So the major industry in all the state is oil and gas.
And you're saying in all of Maracaibo state?
In Maracaibo, right.
Okay.
Right.
So you're from Venezuela. Has anything interesting been happening there in the last week or so?
A lot. There's a lot of interesting in Venezuela in the last 3 weeks.
So if you want, I have an idea, but it's definitely a lot better to hear from someone who's affected by it. What has been happening in Venezuela over the last week?
Well, to have a real explanation, we should go back a lot of years, 20 years, when this type of government took over in 2003.
Was Chavez elected in 98?
He was elected in 98, but there was a coup in 2002.
Yeah.
So he came again in 2003.
Yeah.
So he accelerated all the plans that they have implementing the socialism.
Yeah, and before, Chavez was actually known as like a pretty flexible politician. And then the coup happened and he became a little bit paranoid. Right?
Yeah, in fact, in the first 4 years, he was making the changes that he promised in terms of fight against corruption, eliminate some privilege for the government employees, and improving the quality of life of the Venezuelan people. However, it's not because he was a nice guy and suddenly he changed. Everything was part of the plan that all the socialism people who is involved have been thinking from several years in the past.
And are you talking exclusively in the Venezuelan context, or in your mind are you thinking all the way back to Karl Marx and Frederick Engels?
No, it's just in Venezuela.
Okay.
Just in Venezuela. So starting in 2003, they started to do changes to take over all the legal organization and power in Venezuela. So he changed, or the government changed, the Supreme Court. So they assigned the people, finger assigned, the Supreme Court, the group who control the elections, the Consejo Nacional Electoral, the National
Election Commission.
He changed all the people inside and assigned members who were identified with his political party. Okay? So everything started to move just in his benefit, or the benefit of the socialism, 21st century socialism, that was the name that they assigned. When they assign the people in the National Election Council, they took all the control over the database of voters. So nobody have access. No other political party have access to review or to validate the database. So what happened that in a moment, if they have the control, so nobody knows what was happening inside or doors inside. So they start to do a lot of elections controlled by them, and they always won the elections. So that create in some people the fake illusion of that, oh, he is legally elected. He has been democratic.
And we're still on Chavez now.
Yes, we are still on Chavez. Because it's the beginning of the problem. Right. That is the beginning. So he started to create a sensation that he was legally elected because they control the system. So there is no way to validate that for real he won the election. So in that moment, starting in 2003, everything started to change just to be under total control of the people and the government. Okay.
So you have this situation. You also have 2002-2003 is when the Petróleos de Venezuela SA went on strike, and he got rid of most of the technocrats who were there,
including me.
You worked for them.
Yes, I.
What were you?
I was a manager of field operation in IT department for PDVSA.
Okay.
In Maracaibo.
And were you on strike yourself?
I was in a strike, and I was prosecuted by the government because they trying to force me to provide information that in any way they should have.
Yeah.
Because I was in charge of password and very sensitive information of the management at management level. So they wanted that information in order to create cases against management and in the company. So I refused to do it in that way. There is no legal process, just they are trying to force me and other people to provide that information. So it was prosecuted by the government, and I flew.
You did that before you were arrested, or you were arrested?
No, I never was arrested. I flew before.
And So did you experience intimidation at their hands?
Yes.
Such as?
Yes, prosecution, and I have to hide my family in different places. I was hiding in other houses.
So you slept in a different house every night?
Yes.
Why?
Because they were parked in front of my house, just expecting that I arrived to put me in jail. Mm-hmm.
And pretty much this was in order to change politics within Petróleos de Venezuela so as to go along with subsidies given to Caribbean countries and subsidizing oil within Venezuela, is
right.
That correct?
Right. You know, the industry, the oil, is something that flow from the soil. Mm-hmm. So with control, it's a lot of money. Without control, is 3 or 4, 5 times more money.
That's what Venezuela's polity is completely based on, oil.
Right, the economy is based on that.
And we don't need to go into like the complexities of Dutch disease and rentier states.
You're right.
But oil played a large role beforehand in alienating the populace and creating an environment where Chavez's policies became attractive, right?
Definitely, with the political power, and after that, the economic power, so they were untouchable. Nobody can do anything.
Chavez or the elites?
Chavez.
Yeah.
And his group.
But before, the elites were doing a similar thing.
Well, but remember that before, maybe there was an elite that had the control.
Yeah.
However, the life, the conditions where the people were living were huge better than they are now. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of programs, of course, like in every government, corruption, and maybe they were not a perfect system, but it was a democratic system.
But initially, Chavismo did lower the poverty rate, and it did provide greater access to health care, and it did increase literacy. That is something that even the Congressional Research Service has supported in its statements.
Yes. In the first 3 years, there were some changes that were reflected in improve, not eliminate the conditions, but condition of life. He improved in several sectors. Mm-hmm. He create the feeling that everything was changing for better. Okay, he started to pay, for example, some subsidy to the elderly people. Okay, that in the past was more difficult. And he pretend to give power to the worker that were oppressed by the business owner. But at the end, that was just to create chaos. Uh-huh. At the end, everybody feel that they have right to go in and fight the business owner and take over the business with no experience, with no knowledge, just because they feel the power that the government was assigning to the workers. So that create chaos in Venezuela.
And so you have this state, you have this political theory that's taken hold, and this ideology that's taken hold. You have a state that's very reliant on oil, and a lot of Chavez's policies through 2014, which is 2 years after his death, appear to be working because of an oil price boom, an oil price hike that went south in 2014. And that is when you started to see hyperinflation. By now, Nicolas Maduro was already president, the current president. Well, the current president, if you are siding with the Bolivarian Republic, the not current president, if you're siding with Juan Guaido. Am I saying his name right? Guaido or?
Guaido.
Guaido, yes. So you have a lot of these programs which were financed from Petro money, and also Chavez was a charismatic person, so that provided a lot of support too.
Yes, we cannot deny that he was a very charismatic guy. However, with the increase in the oil price, it doesn't mean that all that money went to our programs to benefit the people.
Right.
He created a lot of programs that were controlled by Cuban people. Mm-hmm. For example, he started to bring people from Cuba to control sport organizations. Mm-hmm. They tried to implement a medical system, which at the very beginning it worked. But some 2 or 3 years later, they were just a way to give money to Cuba. Because all the medic and personnel were coming from Cuba. Uh-huh. While in Venezuela, there was a lot of doctor, America, and personnel that could work in that center. They were prohibited to work in those centers. At least you sign an agreement that you accept the government and you agree with the government, or you will do everything that the government say to do. Mm-hmm. So those programs, even the alphabetization program,
literacy
yeah. program, that was material mm-hmm. that they bought to Cuba. Mm-hmm.
From Cuba or to?
From Cuba. Oh, okay. From Cuba, I'm sorry. They bought in Cuba and used in Venezuela. Uh-huh. Okay?
I was reading a Council of Foreign Affairs article on this, and they said that the Cuban-Venezuelan relationship from Chavismo through Madurismo is interesting, because normally when you have two countries, the richer, more populous, and larger country is generally the dominant one, but because Cuba was so much, the Cuban regime is just so much more competent at governing, they ended up becoming the senior partner in that relationship.
When they create that partnership uh-huh. with the intention of help mm-hmm. people, that was at the end just a way to send money to Cuba mm-hmm. to give them oil at no cost. They never pay for the oil mm-hmm. To pay the government through with the excuse that they were paying to the doctor and other medical people. They were sending money to Cuba, not paying every doctor under the Venezuelan system. So that was a way to send money to Cuba that nobody understand why they were that partnership mm-hmm. just bring benefit to Cuba in terms of money. Mm-hmm. Okay? In a moment, there was a moment, I think that around 2012, they stopped the literacy program. Yeah. No more literacy program. They start to modify books and then educational system in Venezuela just to modify and change the mind of the students mm-hmm. in favor of the socialism mm-hmm. and continue sending money to Cuba. So at the end, maybe there were good intentions, mm-hmm. but they changed totally uh-huh. and that established total control for the Chavez and the government over what they want to do. Mm-hmm. So if you don't agree with what they say, you don't receive it. You don't receive any kind of benefit, mm-hmm. which is
you as a civil. So if you're a person living in a poor neighborhood in Caracas, if you say, "Oh, Nicolas Maduro is great, but he can't he doesn't know how to sing Jose Jose songs. He sings Jose Jose terribly." That could prohibit you from getting any service.
Right. For example, we are living right now, or the people in Venezuela are living that with the food bag. The monthly there is a club, is the name club, which is some food that they distribute between the poor people. But you need to be part of the community groups that control everything in the communities. Mm-hmm. So if you are against the government, you don't receive the food.
And is there a middle class in Venezuela anymore?
I don't think so.
Last I read, there was an 86-87% poverty rate.
Yes, it has been increasing too much.
And that sounds like a very large number, and it is a very large number, 87% poverty rate. A person sitting at home and listening to this will say, that sounds ridiculous, it can't possibly be real. Does that number sound realistic to you?
Yes, are realistic. Uh-huh. Some people cannot believe that the people in Venezuela is in line in the backside of the restaurant waiting for the garbage can to look for food.
And a lot of people, and there's resource scarcity everywhere, right?
Right. And it's something that start to be so common to see in the street, people looking at the garbage can, looking for food.
And how long since when did people start seeing that?
I could say that in the last 3 years, mm-hmm. the last 3 years have been more and more evident that there is a shortage in food. It's the humanitarian crisis. We could say that has been worse in the last 2 or 3 years.
So right after the drop in crude prices.
Right.
So we already established that Chavez, like him or hate him, was an extremely charismatic figure. Mm-hmm. He was the center of Venezuelan political life from 92 when he launched his coup d'etat that failed all the way until his death in 2012 or 2013.
In 2013.
Yeah.
Well, they said that was in 2013, but there are a lot of theories about he died in December 2012.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yeah. So we knew about it in 2013.
Yeah.
So things really did appear to go downhill with Maduro and rapidly. We already established that the oil price drop was one, but are there other factors?
Yeah, definitely there are other factors.
So why was Chavez able to carry a lot of this out with at least a veneer of success, and Maduro can't seem to pull that together?
Well, there were big difference between the two guys.
Uh-huh.
Maduro is a guy with not complete formal education.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't approve high school.
Approve high school?
Yeah, he didn't pass
graduate.
High school. Graduating high school. Yeah. He was driving a bus for the last, I don't know.
He was the president of the Caracas Metro Union, right?
Yes, but because he was identified with the government,
uh-huh.
he jumped mm-hmm. from the bus driver to be the president of the metro. And that started to be very common with the government. People mm-hmm. with no formation in any way, with no education, they were put in critical position in the government
mm-hmm.
just because they followed, they are affected to the mm-hmm. regime.
Mm-hmm. So you have the fact that he's not as charismatic as Chavez.
He has no education. He were not prepared to take so huge responsibility.
Uh-huh.
In fact, he was like assigned to be the successor of Chavez.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because again, they controlled the elections process. So mm-hmm. to elect Maduro, mm-hmm. it was just an order. Okay, I want to have Maduro as a president.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So that change imposed by Chavez started to bother more people every day.
Including Chavistas.
Including Chavistas. A lot of Chavistas start to make the separation. I'm Chavista, but not Madurista.
Uh-huh.
So, and right now, exists some Chavistas that keep saying the same.
The last Attorney General, when he declared the establishment of the People's Constituent Assembly, an assembly to go to counter the National Assembly, I think that was opposed by an attorney general who was Chavista.
Yes.
She was appointed by Chavez.
Yes.
I forget her name. It was Ortega or Ortiz?
Luisa Ortega.
Ortega.
Yeah.
And is she currently in Venezuela?
No.
She was forced to flee after that.
Yes. And she started to make public some of their dirty business. In business in which she participated for a lot of years. With abuse in terms of human rights,
mm-hmm.
she was the general attorney. So she accepted, she promoted, and she discarded a lot of petitions and claims for different mm-hmm. groups to in front of several situations. So she was part of that. Systematic abuse of human rights.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what happened internally in the party, in the party that controlled the government, but there start to be separation. People start to separate from Maduro.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And they are all of them were part of the problem.
Right. So a week ago, this month, Maduro formally took this, was placed as president of what is now called the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
The currency has been in free fall. The U.S. Congressional Research Service said that there's 1,700% inflation on the Bolivar, which to combat, Maduro created a cryptocurrency based on a barrel of oil. It's called the Petro. And people don't hold high hopes for that because pretty much one Petro equals one barrel of Venezuelan oil. And
that is a very complex team. It's a very complex area to understand why they create and how they implemented the Petro. Because at the end, everything ends in that they are looking the way to steal money. This is, that is corruption.
Yeah.
When they try to sell cryptocurrency at defined in terms of oil, you cannot have a monetary system that could be very que fluctúe in terms of the very dynamic market like is oil. So from the base, I'm following what the economists say. From the beginning, there was a wrong system. The creation of the cryptocurrency that they call
Bitcoin,
Petro.
Oh, the current, the Maduro one.
The Maduro. Yeah. The other ones are more stable than the system that Maduro created, the Petro. So this is another thing apart.
Yeah.
So which is wrong.
And that was created to combat hyperinflation, and it hasn't worked.
Yeah. At the end, we don't know if they knew what they were doing, or the hyperinflation is just a consequence of all the bad decisions that have been made.
And they created, and they got rid of the old bolivares, and they created the sovereign bolivar, which has that improved the wealth, the worth of the currency or not?
No. In fact, the big problem started when they start to remove zeros from the money for the currency.
Because it was like 20 million to buy a loaf of bread.
Right. So in that moment, the economy started to be a disaster. Because it's the easiest way to generate more money for the government when they do, when they devaluate the currency. That we're doing, they have been doing with no control. Every 2 years, they make the decision to remove zeros. So in that way, the people lost purchase power.
So why is it that only in the last week, because this has been going on for a while, and people have been predicting an explosion in Venezuela for years now.
Okay.
Why is it only in the last week that it's really come to a head?
Well, the point is that in 2014, there were an election after the change to Maduro. There were an election, as always was programmed, for the National Assembly. So in that election, the majority elected were from the opposition parties. Okay? So when Maduro, when the government realized that they lost the control of the National Assembly, the Supreme Court, which is controlled by the government, shared a resolution or approved a resolution saying that the National Assembly was illegal. They started to create a lot of excuses, but they say that it's illegal. So we are not validating anything from that group, the National Assembly, which was elected in an elections like the last, 50 years. Okay? That was a legal election. The government made the decision to, I don't want to validate that, I will create a new one, which is the ANC. This is the
Asamblea Nacional Constituyente.
Right. So
National Constituent Assembly.
Right. And that was created assigning people that was just in favor of the government. So which means they keep the control. That National Constituent Assembly convoked for new elections. Mm-hmm. Okay? And Maduro won the elections. Mm-hmm. In an election process where the company who controlled the machines, the voting machine, they just declare it's illegal. They manipulate the data. I'm not responsible. My machine are not responsible for the results. So the government manipulated the data, and Maduro was re-elected again. But the Supreme Court is illegal. The ANC is illegal. That election was illegal. Mm-hmm. So at the end, there is no legit president, because Maduro is not a president anymore.
And the only thing keeping him in power now is the military, correct?
Yes and no. When the ANC, the National Assembly, was discarded by the Supreme Court, mm-hmm. they had to leave the country. They were start to be prosecuted. They went to Colombia. And they start to establish like in parallel. They are working in parallel with the ANC.
Yeah.
Okay? So the EN, which is in Colombia, is legal because that was elected. The other one was assigned. So is that National Assembly that was legally elected who start to have conversation with the different countries, with the Grupo de Lima. So they explain everything, and I have a graphic that explains a little bit about that. Following the constitution, the National Assembly, the president of the National Assembly, will take the government, the presidency, in case that we don't have a legal president, mm-hmm. which was the situation in January 10. Maduro is illegal. So following the constitution, Guaido, he didn't proclaim himself as a president. He just take the oath in front of the National Assembly.
Which oath?
The legal one.
So he didn't declare himself president, but
right.
he took the oath in front of the National Assembly.
Because it's what the Constitution said. Because there is a difference.
Uh-huh.
And I would like to explain maybe better in Spanish. And I apologize for that.
That's okay. Yeah, go for it.
El gobierno utiliza, manipula la información diciendo que se autoproclamó.
Uh-huh.
Eso es un golpe de Estado.
Uh-huh.
Lo que se hizo fue juramentó, él se juramentó siguiendo la constitución en frente de la Asamblea Nacional.
So it's an argument over semantics that
right.
the Maduro government is saying that he self-proclaimed himself and Guaido, the opposition leader, is saying I was sworn into office.
Then the government has been manipulating the data, the information. So now he is legally, following what the Constitution said, he's a legal president.
Uh-huh.
He is interim president, so he's supposed to be in two months, convoke new elections. Okay? However, with the Supreme Court, which is not legal, because it was assigned by the government, which is National Elections Council,
mm-hmm.
which is not legal, they cannot be achieved in 2 months. That will take more time.
Yeah.
The government knows that, and the government doesn't, they don't want to accept it. They don't want to remove their people in the power. So that would be a complicated process.
So if Maduro is so unpopular, how has he been able to stay to hang on?
Money.
Mm-hmm.
Money, the military. The generals at the top of the military, which are following instruction of the Cuban, because believe it or not, the biggest council in military area are from Cuba,
uh-huh.
Cubans. So the military are protecting Maduro. They are saying we follow Maduro.
Because
they have receiving a lot of money.
And the soldiers aren't starving. And
the soldiers are starving.
He's been making sure of that.
Yeah. and the general and the higher position, they do whatever they want in the country, with the gold, with the oil, with buying medicine and selling to overpriced and all that stuff. Yeah. The military has the control.
So now we're going. So we've got a good idea of the playing field and the big picture. Now we're going to zoom right back onto Senor Mejia. You said in 2002, 2003, you were fired because you went on strike with many other Petros de Venezuela workers.
Right.
You said there were threats levied against your family, that you had to flee the country. You entered through Florida and claimed asylum, or was there? Did you go through Colombia? Or
No. I came and applied for a political asylum.
Uh-huh.
And I was granted with that.
And how long did it take for that?
Oh, long time, like seven years.
So this was 2003.
2009.
2009, it happened. So this is the Bush Obama years.
Yes.
Bush 2, I should say. Do you still have family in Venezuela?
Yeah, I have brother. Sadly, unfortunately, my dad died in December. But I have two brothers. Mm-hmm. The other four brothers are out around the world, Colombia. Two are here in United States, and one in Dominican Republic.
Yeah,
so my family have fled because of the situation, because that's been impossible.
Have any of them fled because of persecution like you, or are they more economic refugees?
No, more economic refugees. Right.
Uh-huh. I just want to go through the list again. You have one in Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
And Colombia, there's been a large refugee influx to Colombia.
Yep.
Two in DR. Which there's also been...
One in DR.
There's also been a large influx of Venezuelans into the Dominican Republic, which is why the Dominican government cracked down on immigration last year.
And the other two are in Florida.
In Florida. Yeah. And so left in Venezuela, you have...
Two. Because they don't have the legal documentation to leave the country.
Uh-huh. So the two people left in Venezuela are two brothers?
Yes.
And your mother?
No, my mother died 23 years ago.
Okay. And your dad, my condolences on your father.
Thank you.
Did you get a chance to go back and see him?
No.
How did that feel?
Hard. Really, really, really hard. Because the impotencia.
Mm-hmm. Impotence
to cannot go to see what is happening, just through the phone, see what happened, what do you need? No, we need money for the medicine, and there is no medicine in Venezuela. So we send money, and they have the money, but there is no medicine, so
yeah.
My dad died.
So if there's, even if you have the resources here to help, it's hard to help people within the country just because there's nothing left.
That's right.
And if you went to Venezuela, would you immediately be arrested?
It's possible. Mm-hmm. I've been here for 15 years now. And I came in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible, but we cannot take the risk.
Mm-hmm.
What I know from experience from other friends, I don't have Venezuelan documentation with me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have passport. They cancel my passport. I don't have Venezuelan identification. I cannot go with my American passport.
Because they cut off relations recently.
Right.
So are you still technically considered a Venezuelan citizen? Or did they strip you of that? ¿Tú todavía eres un ciudadano de Venezuela o también te lo quito?
Yo no tengo pasaporte.
Ah, pero eres ciudadano de Venezuela. No
en,
sabe.
En teoría, técnicamente, technically,
yeah.
I should be,
yeah.
But I don't know.
So
I cannot take the risk following what my attorney said here during the asylum process. I cannot go to the embassy or to the consulate because that space are Venezuelan territory.
Yeah,
we can go in through the door and they could say, "Oh, you were arrested."
Yeah.
Because this is a Venezuelan territory.
So right now, you know you're a U.S. citizen, but you're not sure if you're a citizen in your native country.
That's right.
So that must really, really hurt a lot, and it must be confusing.
Yes, and it's a mix of feelings. Uh-huh. I hate what happened in Venezuela because of the damage that has caused personally and all my family.
Yeah.
But of course, I still have friends, mm-hmm. and it's my place, so I want to be there. But I hate so much the system which is killing Venezuelan people that I don't want to be there. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I try to imagine myself flying and arriving in Venezuela, and I cannot resist. I end overstressed to thinking what will happen if I go to Venezuela again. So it's complicated. In fact, it's very difficult to describe the feeling. Mm-hmm. This hate and love at the same time. They need to go and to be with my father, with my family, but I hate everything what is causing all that problem. So it's very difficult to describe.
And your two brothers who are still in Venezuela, they have families?
Yes.
How many? Wives, both of them?
No. Children, two, and they are ready to fly to one for Costa Rica and the other one to Argentina.
So they're adults?
Yeah.
So when you talk to them, what are they telling you about the situation? Have you spoken to them in the last week?
No, not in the last week. Uh-huh. I have like 1 month mm-hmm. that I don't...
And so what was their status then?
I know that they are okay. We chat, you know, but there are no personal conversations. So the family chat. So saying, oh, here there are problems outside. Mm-hmm. The National Army is putting in jail kids 12, 13, 14 years just to create fear in the population. So the situation is real, real tense. Mm-hmm. So the people is happy because it's like at the beginning of the end with the international support and all the stuff. The people is happy, but they cannot go outside and express because the government is punishing people who is celebrating or protesting or things like that.
Now, the Western world and the Latin American world has all pretty much come out in support of Guaido.
Mm-hmm.
There's one leader in particular who said that they would consider military intervention into Venezuela, and that is the current president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that would... That could possibly make things good, or do you think that could make worse in the situation?
I don't believe that could happen.
Will or could? Or should?
Should. Uh-huh. Okay, I don't believe. First of all, it's not the solution. Mm-hmm. Second of all, here there is a complicated political situation between Russia, China, and United States. Mm-hmm. So Russia and China, they approve Maduro because they have business in Venezuela. They own half of Venezuela now. Mm-hmm. So for United States go and create a military intervention, it wasn't good. Be good. Not for Venezuela, and not for United States, not for the world. So I believe that the situation is not a military intervention. Mm-hmm. At least that the government do something against the American people who live in mm-hmm. Venezuela.
We're going to speak hypothetically now, hypotheticamente. Tomorrow, the Maduro government collapses. And Sunday, they open up Venezuela to U.S. citizens again. Would you go? No longer has any power.
Not immediately, mm-hmm. because after 15 years, all the people who have more than 10 years in this country have a new life, mm-hmm. have family, jobs, a lot of responsibility here. But and I know that it will be a long process to recover stability in economy and in a political arena. If for some reason, I don't say that will happen, I am requested to go back because I worked 25 years in the oil industry. I could consider that and I could go back. Mm-hmm. But immediately, I that could be responsible to put my family in risk because the situation will be very unstable, mm-hmm. muy inestable for the next 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. It won't be easy that the people in the government, the Chavismo, Madurismo, and socialism leave just saying, okay, I'm sorry, I gotta go. No. There are, even because, even with the humanitarian crisis in Venezuela, there are too much money. Mm-hmm. There are gold that they are stealing with no control. There are too much money. They don't. They want to say, yes, okay, forget it. I go to Cuba.
Would you say you're at a point where anything but Maduro is great? Or do you pause about Guaido or any other opposition politician who becomes president's credentials? Because a lot of Venezuelan politicians in the past, it's no secret, they've become puppets of more powerful countries. They've become corrupt. They've taken money and given it to their friends and family.
Even they have become puppet from the same Chavismo, Madurismo.
Yes.
They participate as opposition, but at the end, mm-hmm. they try to make the things soft for the government.
So at this point in time, is there anything that makes you stop and think about supporting Guaido?
No. No.
You're just 100% Guaido.
Yes. Yeah. And let me tell you something. Let me clarify something. Not believing in him like a god, like the savior, like a superhero. No. Just because he shows that he wants to do the thing in the right way. Mm-hmm. Even when the next elections, we don't know who could be the right candidate for the opposition to be the president. Mm-hmm. But at least he's trying to do the thing in the right way. Mm-hmm. So I believe in him, in what he's doing, as someone who start trying to create solutions, not as a savior, mm-hmm. like people believe in Chavez in 1998, like, oh my mm-hmm. God, this is the Messias.
Yeah.
So I believe in what they are doing mm-hmm. without be a fanatic for the guy.
The events of the past week, how have they affected you?
I cannot ignore what is happening. My wife has family over there.
Mm-hmm. She came over with you in 2002?
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. So we have family, we have friends, and we cannot say, turn off the TV and say, I don't care. Mm-hmm. Emotionally, we have been affected.
How?
We are worried about what will happen. We are worried about if there is a civil war or something like that. Our family are not protected.
Has that been showing itself physically? Tus preocupaciones se han demostrado de forma física en ustedes?
Pues el estar pendiente de la noticia and to reading and listening news until 11:30, 12 a.m. It's time to go to sleep. So it's something that we cannot control. Mm-hmm. And we sleep or we go to bed thinking about that. It's impacting physically. I mean, we are not sleeping well. There is a stress in our conversation regarding what is happening in Venezuela. Mm-hmm. Oh, I read this, I heard this. My friend in Caracas sent me a text that the National Guard is punishing a lot of people. So that creates a stress in the family.
Does this affect Rhode Island?
The population in Rhode Island has been growing most in the last 5 years, and especially the last 2 years, because there are more people coming from Venezuela. I firmly believe that everybody are in the same situation that I am right now, mm-hmm. expecting what will happen. Mm-hmm. Because the people who recently arrived, they are ready to go back immediately. Mm-hmm. They have no root in this country yet. So they are thinking, and I can feel that when I have conversations with other Venezuelan people. No, yeah, I will go back. I just waiting that everything improve, but I will go back. So it's affecting me.
So is there anything else you want to add before I end the interview?
No, I want to say that it was a surprise that someone here wants to know more about that. One of the reasons that my process for political asylum took so long is because nobody knew what really was happening. Mm-hmm. Even a lot of people doesn't know where Venezuela is located, and they don't understand what is happening. They don't care, by the way. So that makes the process longer. But I think that is important because with the globalization, we are not alone anymore. Mm-hmm. All of us are part of the same. the crisis in Venezuela, the humanitarian crisis, affected all the countries in South America. Mm-hmm. People walking 900 kilometers to arrive to Peru or Ecuador or even Chile, which I believe that is crazy.
Colombia is the big one.
Colombia, Dominican Republic. So we cannot ignore, and the world cannot close their eyes and look on another side as they have been doing in the last 5 years.
So
it's important.
Why do you think nobody cares?
Because they are not being affected direct to their pockets. The situation now explode because Colombia has been affected greatly. Ecuador, Peru has been affected. Chile and Argentina, they are taking advantage. They have been, I think, smarter. They are taking all the professionals that are coming and giving them opportunities because they have good professionals at no cost.
Dominican Republic?
Dominican Republic. We have, with Dominican Republic, more family connections. So I know and I heard some friends here that there are some problems, but are not so big like with Colombia because it's proportionally less people.